Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforminghighereducation. This message was paid for by EY.
The Guardian.
The technology likely to have the greatest impact on the next few decades has arrived. And it's not social media, it's not big data, it's not robotics, it's not even AI. And you'll be surprised to learn that it's the underlying technology of digital currencies like Bitcoin. It's called the blockchain.
So how are you feeling about doing an episode on blockchain?
Sick to my stomach.
Really? You went that dramatic with it?
I feel like blockchain is probably my least favorite buzzword of the past couple of years.
Why?
Because it's not just one that I feel like I can ignore because it keeps coming up. I know we've been avoiding doing a podcast on it so far, but I feel like we're kind of ignoring this huge thing that loads of people are really interested in, even though I still don't understand why they're all really interested in it.
I really like that we're looking at it in an artistic way.
Yeah.
Simply because I got to make really good fun of the Titanic line, "Draw me like your other French girls." Is that the...
"Draw me like one of your French girls."
Is that the line? Yeah?
I think so.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in years. "Draw me like one of your blockchains." Blockchain. It's one of those words that seems to just make people switch off. But don't switch this podcast off, or you'll miss out on a story that features kidnapping, blood, and Lamborghinis. Not what you think of when I say the word blockchain, right? It turns out that while we were all letting our eyes pass over any headline that included the word, blockchains have become more and more popular outside of the original tech-obsessed user base. The blockchain has joined the likes of painting, sculpture, and photography as a medium for artists.
So I turned myself into a coin or a token, as they call them, on the Ethereum blockchain. This was a response to a couple years of sort of feeling commodified as an artist, where the attention was moving from the artistic value of my work to the monetary value. And so I think in an attempt to sort of gain some control over this narrative, I decided to treat myself like a coin, not a currency, but again, like this token, and put myself in the hands of the masses.
I'm Jordan Erica Weber, and this week I find out why artists are turning to blockchain for inspiration and how they can use the technology to explore one of the biggest questions we have: what is the value of a human life? This is Chips with Everything. You don't need to know the nuts and bolts of exactly how a blockchain works to understand the role it can play in a work of art, but just to get a grasp on the basics, I went in search of someone who could give me a quick explainer.
Yeah, my name's Cathy Mulligan, and I'm a visiting researcher at Imperial College London. I have been researching cryptocurrencies for several years, since about 2010.
Cathy was also the former co-director of the Imperial College Centre for Cryptocurrency Research. As she explains, it can be difficult to get people interested in the research that she does.
Well, I think it's like any new technology, isn't it? You won't really pay attention to it until you realise exactly how it might actually affect your life, your day-to-day life. So what we've seen is a huge uptake from what I call geeks, if you will, and I am one of those. So it's very much a technology-focused, technology-interested public originally, but we've seen it sort of expand slowly but surely to other people in the broader community. community. And that's been driven quite a lot, I think, one by interest from press. People like yourselves have been talking about it a lot and explaining this to people, so that's great. But also we've seen a number of applications emerge that make it simpler to understand how to buy and sell cryptocurrency on your mobiles or on your laptop.
I should point out that while they're often discussed together, Bitcoin and blockchain are not the same thing. This cryptocurrency is supported by a blockchain, but I needed Kathy to explain how.
Yeah, so if you think about it, a blockchain is a way to create an irrefutable record of a transaction happening. That's the very high-level perspective. We can go into the technical details, which is that in order to create trust in our financial system, for example, today, we have the Bank of England. The Bank of England is on all of our currency, and they provide the trust. In order to do that in blockchain, what we say is, well, we get every single person or every single node on the network to store a copy of every single transaction. So the idea is we create trust through radical transparency.
Think of it like this. When you're playing football with your friends, you probably don't have a referee. Instead, you all know what the score is at each point throughout the game, and that score can't be changed unless most of you think it should be. Back in the world of technology, say you have a peer-to-peer network, that is, a group of interconnected participants who all have the same privileges as each other, like a group of friends, rather than being connected to some centralized authority, like a ref. If that network uses a blockchain, that means that each participant has an identical copy of a record of events, like the score, that can't be changed without consensus. While I'd love to be able to say that I came up with that analogy myself, I know even less about football than I do about blockchain. I saw it in a Medium post. Now, back to Kathy.
So there were people who quite honestly believed that if you built these kind of decentralized financial instruments, if you will, so Bitcoin was obviously the big first application of that nature, that you would be able to disrupt the established order of things, sort of crypto-anarchists.
This is going to be one of the watershed days in financial markets history.
It was a manic Monday in the financial markets. The Dow tumbled more than 500 points after two pillars of the street tumbled over the weekend. Lehman Brothers, a 158-year-old firm, filed for bankruptcy.
So if we look back to when Bitcoin was released, you know, many people talk about it being in response to the global financial crisis. And, you know, the financial system still really suffers from systemic risk. So the problems haven't been fixed. So, you know, many people feel that using that, you can create a completely decentralized economy or structure.
Crypto anarchists are interested in privacy and anonymity. And the 2008 inventor of the blockchain is no different.
The person who wrote the paper, or the people who wrote the paper, called themselves Satoshi Nakamoto.
Satoshi Nakamoto is a pseudonym, and even the experts aren't really sure whether it represents an individual person or a group. Nakamoto created the first blockchain database as part of the implementation of Bitcoin, as a secure and transparent way to record transactions. But it doesn't have to be money. A blockchain can be used to record all sorts of things.
The big change for cryptocurrency is it's not just a pound coin that I would give someone, or a 20-pound coin on a cryptocurrency. I could give them the deeds to my house. So, you know, could be less than 20 pounds, who knows, my house. other types of examples are medical records or indeed degree records. So we had a little student project one year where they were registering degrees onto the Bitcoin network in order to remove the problem associated with students saying either they have a degree that they don't have or they have the marks. You know, they give themselves a first when they go for jobs instead of a 2-1. So I think the thing about the cryptocurrency aspect of this is that it takes us into a new understanding of what value actually is. You know, I think the potential for the technology is really big in removing costs from established industries, but also creating new types of industry. Because the one thing that blockchain will allow to happen is it will allow individuals and, you know, very small companies to coordinate with one another in their own micro supply chains. So that could actually have an impact on the overall industrial structure of a couple of industries.
It seems like lately things are shifting. So blockchain has been around for long enough now that it's not just these kind of crypto anarchists and early adopters that are using it, but even the creative industries are getting involved. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I mean, what blockchain actually represents is a challenge to some of our cultural norms. It's a challenge to the way we structure the economy, the society. It has an impact on our environment. It actually speaks to a number of different things that we as human beings have to think about deeply as we move forward in, you know, our society and economy. And I think for me, blockchain actually represents that final drop in the digital tsunami. It's now the way to help us reform and reshape our economy. And I think that speaks probably to artists in a really deep way, because it's something that might help them challenge social norms. And if they're the type of artist that wants to challenge that, then potentially it's a brilliant tool to use for that.
So whether or not you fully understand exactly how blockchains work, it's clear they're spreading throughout society. And given the questions their use is raising about how we value things, it's unsurprising that artists have started to take an interest.
In the process of talking about the how and why we value anything at all, I came to realize that people are very quick to ascribe value to things, that they don't have a problem with that, but they have a complicated relationship when things are priceless.
More on this after this short break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Kibera in Nairobi in Kenya is the biggest slum in Africa and one of the biggest in the world. And that makes it one of the more surprising settings for a ballet school.
I want to work with children to see if I can make a difference through dance. If I can just use myself as a tool to transform children's lives in the informal settlements.
Join me, Lucy Lamble, for this week's episode of Small Changes. I chat to one dance teacher who's made it his life's work to provide underprivileged children in Kenya with an education that isn't always afforded to them by the government. Just head over to theguardian.com/podcasts or search Small Changes on your favourite podcast app.
Welcome back to Tips with Everything. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. Before the break, I tried my best to get my head around blockchain with the help of computer scientist Kathy Mulligan. She also explained how blockchain is becoming a popular tool with creative industries.
I'm Kevin Abosh. I'm an artist. I deal with issues around value, identity, and human currency.
It turns out that Kevin has done some very interesting things with blockchain technology. For example, he turned himself into a coin. My producer Danielle called him on Skype to find out more.
This was a response to a couple of years of sort of feeling commodified as an artist, where the attention was moving from the artistic value of my work to the monetary value. And so I think in an attempt to sort of gain some control over this this narrative, I decided to treat myself like a coin, not a currency, but again, like this token, and put myself in the hands of the masses. And I did that through what I refer to as a sort of a logical and emotional process, whereby I had my blood drawn. My wife is a doctor, so that's not too difficult.
Thank God.
I created a token on the blockchain, 10 million of them, each divisible to 18 decimal places. When you create a token via what's called a smart contract, a bit of coding, it generates a contract address on the blockchain, this alphanumeric of 42 letters and numbers. And so I had a rubber stamp made with that alphanumeric, and used my blood to print on paper. So there were these physical artworks, and then there was the virtual artwork.
Tell me about Lambo, because you managed to sell a piece of art or crypto art or however you'd like to describe it for more than what an actual Lamborghini would start selling at. So how did you manage that, and why did you do that?
I'd been working on a number of pieces around this IamaCoin project. I put out on social media a work called Stealing the Contents of This Wallet is a Crime, where I put up a wallet, a private key. I filled it with these tokens, which are essentially pieces of me. There was a warning on the work that said, Stealing the Contents of This Wallet is a Crime. And over 5 days, those pieces of me were stolen or slowly removed. I would argue that a crime was committed. Because they're pieces of me, it's potentially a kidnapping. In now being part of that world of cryptocurrency, I was very much part of the world of blockchain technology, but not cryptocurrency. I started to become aware on Twitter and social media of the crypto bros. They're focused on making a lot of money. And there's this sort of this hashtag they use, hashtag Lambo, that is this sort of declaration for success identity. As I started to consider it, I realized, no, there was a little bit of irony there. In fact, they were declaring to their tribe that they were an active participant in this crypto zeitgeist and the insanity of it all. Then I created a token on the Ethereum blockchain, again, a unique token, a single one called Yellow Lambo. I thought yellow is a nice color for a Lamborghini if you're going to get one. So there's this virtual work that you can't see. Again, an intermediary proxy. And then I bring it back into the world via a 10-foot neon sculpture. It was sold to a gentleman named Michael Jackson, who was the former COO, Chief Operating Officer of Skype.
Even more interesting, however, is the question that inspired Kevin's latest project, How Do We Value Human Life?, which he explored in a collaboration with artist and activist Ai Weiwei, called Priceless.
I've said before, you know, from the moment we were born, people try to ascribe value to us. There are those that will dismiss individuals or groups of people because they don't feel they can extract value out of them. And so in the process of talking about the how and why we value anything at all, I came to realize that people are very quick to ascribe value to things, that they don't have a problem with that. I mean, it comes naturally. But they have a complicated relationship when things are priceless. Would you, if you could, if I say to you, give me $1,000 or you lose your mother's life, that's a no-brainer. There's $1,000. But then if I say there's somebody you'll never see, they're in Myanmar, for instance, and give me $1,000 and we'll spare their life. Suddenly, you know, it's like, well, I've only got $1,000 and I don't know who that is. I mean, it's a weird, perverse way of looking at things. But I like to think of things coming from this kind of extreme point of view.
These works aren't exactly like we can walk into a museum and it's up on the wall and we can see it. So how do you present these works?
With these, we considered our time together and pulled out moments, seemingly banal, fleeting moments, things we may have forgotten about, like sharing tea together or walking down a certain street or him saying to me that I have a big nose and I look back at him and I say, you have a big nose. And just like this, little things that, you know, may be forgotten. We extracted those moments just as sort of case studies or just, you know, there are infinite amount of moments, but those are the ones we pulled out 12 of them and created a wallet address on the blockchain. So we created these wallet addresses on the Ethereum blockchain that correspond to each of these shared moments. And inside the wallet, we sort of validated or inoculated with a nominal amount of like a couple billionths of a priceless token. And so those works exist in a very limited edition. And then, of course, we have the token, which is arguably the more interesting part of the work, because Weiwei and I made only two tokens, but they're still divisible to 18 decimal places. So one of those tokens is not available. It's unattainable. It's priceless. The other token is. So again, it comes down to that idea that there's one token, but it is divisible to 18 decimal places, right? So it's a billionth. So if I give you 100 millionth, you really have enough to break off everybody on the planet a billionth of a priceless token.
In releasing this work, Kevin and Weiwei hope to prompt discussion about the value of the things we call priceless. So what's next for this crypto artist? Well, apparently we shouldn't even call him that.
You know, I would be surprised in 6 months if I'm still using blockchain as a method to make art. And that's what I'm doing. I'm using it as a method. So it's in the same way you might go buy some canvas or some wire mesh or something, you know, that, to create art. I'm just using blockchain as a method. Like I said, I'm using these blockchain addresses as proxies. That'll run its course and I'll move on. That said, I think because of this moment in time and blockchain's impact on society, I mean, and it is having a huge impact on society, I think because of that, I will probably, for the rest of my life, be asked to weigh in on all of this that we're discussing. So, and I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. I may make some crypto art, but I don't identify as a crypto artist.
As Kevin says, blockchain isn't going anywhere. But the next time someone tries to talk to you about it, maybe you can use your newfound knowledge of artworks like Priceless as a way to change the conversation. I'd like to thank Kathy Mulligan and Kevin Abosh for joining us on the show this week. There will be a link to Kevin's website on this week's episode description on the Guardian website. If you want to talk about blockchain, I'm probably not the best person. But if you do want to get in touch about this episode or any other thoughts or ideas you have, just send an email to chipspodcast@theguardian.com. That's all for this week. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforming higher education. This message was paid for by EY.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.